Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom, Andrew on the board. SB Futures down a buck 50. NASDAQ Futures down 17. We managed to, after a big move up on Monday, we managed a little bit yesterday. We were up 9 in S&P and 83 in the NASDAQ. Looked a little heavy, consolidation day, but still to the upside, so nothing bad there. VIX was up a little bit to 17.37, way down from the 21.5 when we were selling off. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay.
I want to talk a little bit about... Are jousting back and forth regarding people leaving in the portal and so forth. But first of all, hey, I have a question for... I won't say we have a producer that has a degree and was looking to spread out his capabilities in other areas by taking some courses. And I said, why, instead of us contemplating about it, why don't we ask Kevin? Since he knows... Where could a guy like Andrew, who's had his degree in voice over call and, you know, networking and all that kind of stuff, where does he pick up if he wanted, you know, five basic business courses over the next year? Or would you recommend certificates or courses, or where would he go?
Well, there's a lot of directions to go there. If we're looking for a credential, yeah, you can get certificates in business. I would certainly think you at least need an intro accounting course, because... And one of the reasons is, and I do accounting hits even in my IT courses. So one of the reasons I do that is I say eventually you will have to request capital expenditure money, and you better be able to speak the language of how to justify a capital expenditure, which means you need to be able to put your proposal into a financial statement format. So. I think that is really important. I would definitely look, you know, there's intro to business courses, and I think they're fine in that they give you a nice little overview of different business functions. But I would be looking at a principles of management class, even if you don't intend to be, don't intend to go into management. And if you're on a technical career path, you don't have to go into management to make a lot of money. Just because I think any emphasis on leadership is well worth it. So I would look for that. If there's a principles of leadership course, something like that would make sense. I have a bias towards supply chain, but I think a good supply chain management overview would be worthwhile. And for anybody who says, you know, what do we mean by supply chain management? I think if you take business, and you say, well, take out marketing, take out accounting, take out human resources, and take out sales, and pretty much what's left is your supply chain stuff. So it's all the operations stuff, and I just think it's so important to understand any business where you work, even if you're an IT person, an IT professional. If you understand the business, because ultimately that's who's paying your bills and paying your salary, but it's because you have to match it. Technology solutions are always business decisions. That's one of my messages for my tech people, is you're still making business decisions. You don't do technology just for the sake of, hey, this is really elegant stuff. I really, really like what it does. It better advance the business or you're not spending the money.
But what level would you, I mean, he's already got his degree. So he's got his bachelor's. Now, a UIC is not going to let him take an accounting course, are they, without being enrolled there? I mean, what about Moraine Valley? What about a junior college?
You can enroll and not be on a degree track. You can enroll and take courses.
Okay, you can. I didn't know that. Right.
Find Andrew. We can find him a way to get into a Zoom course with me.
Well, so I also said, hey, maybe Kevin will just figure out a way to do it.
Right now I'm teaching Saturday mornings, but it's an informatics fundamentals course, so it's very, you know, it's more basic than a guy who's already completed a curriculum is going to ever need. So sorry, can't help you there. But I'm also teaching a project management. Have you taken project management, Andrew?
No, that would be. I legitimately, I have not taken a business-based class probably since high school. So, I mean, I know you're just saying, like, you know, that your first class would be for someone who understands the fundamentals. I am pretty not far along overall.
And the informatics, when I say the informatics, that is a first class for our IT students. You're way past that. So you're not getting in my class this weekend, is what I'm telling you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I do think, you know, you start thinking about and do a little research on what the trends in the market are, because there's a whole lot of networking stuff now that is either going to be enhanced by use of artificial intelligence tools or potentially replaced. Certainly a lot of the cybersecurity stuff, you know, a lot of the monitoring and penetration testing that we're going to do, it makes a whole lot of sense as a cybersecurity app. But always the people who are going to thrive in the workplace are those who can work in teams, that can lead projects, that can implement stuff. You know, there's a lot of good ideas out in the world, but there's not a lot of people who implement the good ideas. I talk to business owners all the time, and the conversation goes like this. You got a lot of good ideas at your place? Yep. Any of them ever get implemented? Nope. Because people don't know how. They don't know what to do to organize a project and make it happen. You should learn both about agile type of project management and then the more traditional style project management. Agile is what your software developer is going to be using. And so if you get into a DevOps type of model, it's going to be very agile driven. So you'll have that. If you want to talk offline, we can spend some time. We can make some time.
Kevin, did you happen to catch what Bill was talking about yesterday? I was asking about, you know, the water treatment plants and the roads he worked on. And he was, I said, well, you know, did they front you with the financing like they did for the railroad cars at Pullman? They won't front the firms. He goes, no, they actually, you get a progress payment after like 30 days, but you had to front the 30 days. But then you'd send them a bill, and they might pay you in 45 days. So you had to have some serious financing lined up. Even in theory, if you were never going to be very far behind, you could be 3 months behind. And if you got 200 people working on a job and the material, that's a boatload of cash that you had to have a line of credit for.
Right. And look, it's important when, you know, I've made lots of IT proposals, you know, you take it apart, you put it in an income statement format, but you also lay out the cash flow. You have to understand all of those things, and then you have to know what your company is after. And it depends on, you know, if you're a publicly traded company, they're going to care very much about the net income effect, especially if it's a significant spend. If you're a privately held company, you're probably more looking at cash flow and EBITDA. So, you know, you need to know some of that accounting language. You don't have to be, you know, deeply expert in it, but you do need to know some of it. I would say, so, you know, that would be high on the list. That's why I say take an accounting course. It's worth
it.
Well,
funny you should mention that, because when I went to, I was still at Notre Dame, and when I got out of, well, I didn't want to do pre-med. I decided I wasn't going to go do that, even though I did okay in there. So I went and talked to these guys in Chicago, and I said, you know, I'd like to get an MBA here at some point. And the guy says, well, don't take 4 years of business, for God's sake. He says, you know, it shouldn't take you 6 years to learn this stuff. He goes, why don't you go take economics, which sentenced me to two semesters of a language, which I was horrible at, bad enough in English. And anyway, but I kind of jumped the gun, and I took accounting at Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame, they didn't care where you took classes. It's not like Illinois, you know, where you get into the agrarian school and you try and take engineering, they won't let you in because they're full up type of thing. It was a year course, Kevin, with this guy. I forget what his name was, but he's like 5'8", always wore a suit, looked exactly like an accountant because he was. Talked like one, was kind of boring like one. And we sat there, and it was, you know, what was it, debits to the door and credits to the window or whatever the hell it was. And you had to
raise your left hand, that's debit.
Oh, yeah. Right. It was, you know, and we had this big workbook. You had to fill out the workbook. And you know what? You learned it from the ground up, from your first thing. You know, you sell a chicken sandwich. Okay, where does the cash go? Because everything is double entry. And you're sitting there, okay, where does the other half go? And when I got to the University of Chicago, you had to take the basic accounting. It was a quarter with this big, thick book with all this accounting theory. Kevin, I was so far ahead, everybody else wasn't close. Because, I mean, if you don't really get what you're doing, you could have all the theory in the world, but you still couldn't balance a ledger. You know,
and the thing is that whatever you understand, whatever you understand about the computer applications in any business, and you know, whether whether you're looking at ERP systems or whatever else, it doesn't really matter. They're still subledgers of the general ledger of the accounting system. They still have to balance to the penny every day. That, you know, that's just the way it is. And so, you know, an understanding of that and what the process is like, I think, is just really, really important.
Hey, what about my guys were texting me last night that there's 750 people in the NCAA basketball portal after 2 days. Did you see that?
Yeah, and the teams that are still alive haven't even started yet.
Oh, yeah, well, I bet somebody's working on it.
Well, you know what, and I've mentioned this because, you know, the Notre Dame has two guys, both graduating. I think they will miss Tay Davis. He's a good ball player, and he, you know, I know he's graduating, but I wish he would stick around an extra year anyway, because he has the eligibility. And he came in with Shrewsbury. He had transferred in when Shrewsbury got hired. From Rutgers, the other one is J.R. Konechny. He's a local guy. He has been sort of on the I don't want to say on the outs. He's been more or less a very much a role player, and his role fluctuates a lot. I think he's a perfect guy to follow the same path that a few years ago Notre Dame had a guy named Nick Jogo. And, you know, Jogo was the same thing. He was never quite an ACC caliber ball player, but he could come in and contribute once in a while. And guys like that are, you know, I'm not dismissive of them is what I'm saying. But Jogo completed his 4 years, got his degree, had a year of eligibility left. He went to Northeastern. So much a step down in conference caliber. And while he was at Northeastern, he got to be a starter his last year and averaged about 11 points a game and had a really good last year experience in college basketball. Because one of the things to always remember about these guys, you know, especially the four-year guys that are just looking for that one last crack at playing, this may be their last chance to play big-time basketball. You know, some of them might get a gig in Europe or something like that, but or overseas in one place or another. But in many cases, when you say, you know, I want to play at the most competitive level possible for as long as possible, this may be the end of the line for them. And so a guy like JR, I'm really, you know, I hope he lands in the right place. He's a good guy, always played hard. And so there are a bunch of those kind of guys in the portal, and that's okay. You know, that's and then there's a bunch of guys. You know, how many guys are we looking at as they talk about their talk about them in the NCAA tournament, and they're on their third school.
What's the current rules are? You can go wherever you want, or after 2 years, after one spin, you got to sit out a year. That went the way the dodo bird, right? You go wherever you want now.
That got a restraining order.
But you have what was the other question? Are we officially 5 years of eligibility? Or did that?
No, we're not there yet.
That's a proposal on that.
Yeah, but I think it's good. You know, let me give you another example. At the end of last season, Kerry Booth left, and Kerry Booth was a very highly regarded player. He Shrewsbury had recruited him to Penn State. Booth's father is the general manager of the Nuggets. And played, you know, he played basketball at Penn State and then in the NBA for a little while. And Booth decided to leave. He didn't like the role that had been carved out for him. He left and transferred to Illinois. Guess where he is now? He's back in the portal. So, you know, some guys just, you know, they're looking for something, but really they're looking for something else at all times.
Well, and if you're, I mean,
there's a big element of no patience for, you know, getting in, learning, and carving out your role, and that's a little bit different.
Well, there's a few questions here, Kevin, and then after the break we'll talk about business. But hey, when you launch in, you've basically bleep canned your current scholarship, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. When you enter your name into that database, then you have said I'm leaving, and the coach at your current destination does not have to take you back.
And they can that adds an extra guy they can grab next year.
Yeah, and so that and it does in that respect. It's good, you know. Organization isn't quite the right word because this is so chaotic. But at least it gives the coach at the program you're leaving a heads up that he needs to go to work and start filling out his roster. So I guess that part of it's good. And we've had some conversations, and I think that this is absolutely true, that there needs to be some kind of a two-way commitment here. And it's one thing, you know, recruiting guys out of the portal, there's not a big expense to that. You may fly them in to visit with you. You may, you know, be working with people to line up their endorsement deals, all that kind of stuff. But it's not the same as tracking a high school player for 2 or 3 years and, you know, lining up unofficial visits and official visits. And it's not the same as that. But it's still... there's a commitment to the athlete, and I think it needs to be somewhat reciprocal. Might have been Hal mentioned it yesterday, said it used to be totally stacked in favor of the schools. Now the system is totally stacked in favor of the athletes, and there's got to be some in-between that makes more sense.
Well, you have, in terms of logistics, if I'm sitting there and... Well, we're not going to be coach, Kevin, but someday you might have enough money where you could be on the board in Notre Dame or Illinois or Russell, Indiana, who knows. You sit there, and at some point you got to say, okay, there's 750 people in here. There's going to be 40 of them, maybe 50 of them, that we at least looked at recruiting. So we have some kind of an idea of who they are, how big they are, if they're any good. We'll probably have some kind of idea if they've been injured in college and those kinds of things. But if you don't, and the kid is essentially on the bench and plays 3 minutes a game and that's what he wants to get out of, how the hell do you know if he's any good? There's no real game films. The school's not going to give you practice films. How do you have any idea if the kid's any good?
Once the guy's leaving, why would a student not, why would a school not help you? And again, in some cases, there is a lot of film because almost every game is on TV somewhere. So you can get your hands on that, and then there's other situations. I have a Twitter feed that follows you know, Notre Dame basketball and recruiting, and they're listing the guys, you know, that this guy put his name in, he's been contacted by, and Notre Dame's on his contacted by list. That's great, so I'm following that. But I'll give you one example, is a guy was a really good player at Delaware. Well, Delaware is coached by Martin Inglesby, Notre Dame alum, longtime Mike Bray assistant. Do you think Notre Dame can go and get a candid review of the player from Martin Inglesby? And I would say, yeah. And I think, coaches have networks all over the place. They all know each other. They have their go-to people. And I think you would find that you can always talk to a coach who either coached for or against any player that interests you.
I'm going to be a devil's advocate here. I won't say an ass, but I'm going to be an ass. If somebody shows up,
I recruit. It's hard to believe, Tom. No way.
Well, when I say this, it's not a personal thing, Kevin. It goes back to my stupid line. You can't be half a gangster. I mean, Delaware recruits this kid. They pay for him. He goes to school for 2 years. They pay for private tutors if he's not the kind who wants to go to class. You're bringing him along in your program, and you think. You get him some NIL money because maybe he's not like some good-looking young lady that they want in a State Farm commercial. You get him some NIL money, and all of a sudden he goes, "Gee, somebody else is paying more, and I get the start. Maybe I don't. I'm out of here." Why the bleep would I help that kid?
Well, I guess it depends on the circumstances, Tom. Did he graduate from Delaware?
Well, that's a whole different story. The graduate part, but these kids are going long before that.
It's because there's a lot of guys that leave after a year or two at a lower level because they think they have shown enough at this point that they can play at a higher level, and I get the motivation for that. I'm not arguing with that, but I think you have a point. Is I've sunk a lot of development into you, what do I get? And it's similar to the setup that a lot of places have with tuition. I'll pay for you to get your master's degree, or I'll pay for you to get your bachelor's degree. But if you leave before 2 years are up after the last payment, anything that I paid you, I get to claw back some of it.
What happens if, people on the trading floor and some attorneys' firms, what if I say I want to non-compete? You can't play after 3 years at Notre Dame and us paying all this crap for you, you can't play in the ACC. I put that in your contract. Every other part of business is doing it.
Yeah, I've had non-competes in contracts before. If I have a non-compete, what do I get in return for it? And I think that becomes a negotiation. So I've said in the past, I think that this will all shake out where these players become employees of the school. They can sign contracts as athletes. And it's going to either commit them to a term, or they're going to be, some other kind of clawback on it. And I think you will see them signing at least 2 year contracts, which will also mean the schools can't run them off anymore.
Yeah, well, a lot of schools don't.
Got to go both ways, doesn't it?
Because this is when we talk about this, it's really, you keep saying it. By the way, you're absolutely correct, which I don't really even want to say, much less I shouldn't say on radio.
No, that hurts, doesn't it? It doesn't hurt.
But every case is sort of different. And I'll give you an example. One of the guys who, the local bar, you've been to the Tripoli Tap. I know a lot of people in there. There's guys that are in sports and so forth. And one of the dudes was, I think he was quarterback at Eastern Illinois. Good, real nice guy. And his kids went to, he went to Mount Carmel. I think his kids went there, too. And one of the kids is actually playing for Fordham. He's playing fullback for Fordham or something. If there is a fullback anymore. And he was telling me about I won't use the name, but say it's a middle-sized school in Ohio. Has a football team, but they're not Ohio State. And they get this kid out of, I believe, Loyola, who's, everybody says is pretty spectacular, but his mom didn't want him in a big, huge place right out of the gate. And so they fly to mom down in a private jet to the school, and she goes, "That's where you're going." So the kid's playing there, and I guess he had a huge freshman year. And now I think we all get the idea that he's not going to finish his college career there. Now, if I'm this school and, you know, Ohio State comes calling, why am I not like the Midlothian, whatever the guys are in baseball? I found them, I recruited them, I trained them, I fed them. You owe me money. I mean, how do they not get something from Ohio State or Notre Dame or Indiana or whoever?
That could wind up being part of the ultimate structure of this. I know there are enough people. There are enough people in power in the NCAA that are not okay with the status quo. So there will be changes. The problem is that if you're going to negotiate some kind of deal, if you're going to negotiate this a couple of ways, who do you negotiate with? There's no such thing as a college basketball players association.
Well, so, I got an assignment for you on break. Define this status. What is it? To me, it looks like utter chaos.
It's annual. It's real simple. It's annual free agency for all.
But you don't even. But the people who. What did Bill say? That though. By the way, how about going through your list after the break,
of the coaches.
That is spectacular. SP Futures down a quarter. NASDAQ Futures down 14. Be right back. Got some good stuff. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Andrew on the board. I'm digging through those things Kevin sent yesterday, but I have our stuff for traffic weather. S&P Futures up 25 cents, NASDAQ Futures down 12. We've had a pretty good day Friday, a huge day up on Monday, a little bit of an up day yesterday, and now some might say we have consolidated, and today's a key day as to which way we go. We'll see how that all works out. Some might say that, but then again, some always say the market's going up, and some always say the market's going down, and that's what makes a trade, right? Over in Europe, now these guys have been up. Today the DAX is down 128.5%, but they were up more than that yesterday. FTSE actually is up 18. They've been kind of going the opposite way, the other two guys, in a few days lately. It's up 0.2. Hack around down 41.5. We're in Asia, and these guys keep trying to push the market higher, and some spots it's working, some it's not. Nikkei up 246.6%. Hang Seng up 139.6. Shanghai again almost unchanged, down a penny or down a buck. Bonds, we have the 10-year up 3 base points, 4.34. The Bund unchanged at 2.79. Oil still can't get over 70 bucks, but it's getting close. 69.65 up 65 cents. Brent up 65 cents, 73.67. Natural gas up a penny, 3.85. Gold up another 7.30, 3,033. Staying over 3,000, if it does, I think these what you're seeing is the gold miners are finally starting to catch up a little bit. And whether that stays going on, we'll see. Silver up 10 cents, 34.29. Copper up 6 cents, 5.27. Foreign exchange, dollar's getting stronger again, but the euro is down to 107.9. Remember, it was down to like 106, then we're up to 109. Now it's down to 107.9. A British pound, down a little bit, but still 129. That's steadier than the euro. Crypto, up 61 bucks, 88,155. So the duck under 80,000 last week has been made 10% higher than that now. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right, it is 6:35 here in Chicago on March 26th. Just a little bit of sports here. Excuse me. There we go. Let's see. The Cubs won over the Braves with a little bit of spring training, 4-2.
over to Chicago weather, and it's currently 31 degrees. It's going to be a sunny one, at least throughout the day. It's going to be warming up. We're going to have a high of 46 degrees today. Over in Phoenix, they're going to have a cloudy day, but it's going to still be pretty hot. They're currently at 67 degrees, and they're going to have a high of 93. And finally, for Chicago traffic, there's only one major accident to report. That is on the Kennedy on the right shoulder, and that is heading west Milwaukee Avenue. So expect a little bit of delays if you're heading on the outbound on the Kennedy. As right now, the outbound Kennedy from Janeburn to O'Hare is going to take you about 31 minutes. Other than that, traffic is about business as usual. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Kevin, Bill Moriarty opened up the can of worms. Well, we've talked about it a little bit, but coaches that have been kind of tossed about, and all of a sudden they make their way back in. In football, a lot of the college guys that had real issues in college and like been banned and stuff, they fled to pro, right? Who was the guy from Southern Cal way back in the day? Our era, went to Tampa Bay.
McKay. You're thinking of McKay, but there's also Pete Carroll.
Pete Carroll, and he was from the Lou Holtz tree. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, and Carroll actually, he had a pro background before going to USC, so it wasn't an unusual move. Just the timing was right ahead of the posse for Pete Carroll.
When Lou Holtz was the coach at Minnesota, John's brother Pete, he was on the show when we first started a couple times. Pete was a linebacker up there, and Pete Carroll was the D-backs coach. And then when Lou Holtz came to Notre Dame, I don't know where Pete Carroll went. I think there was an interim stop between there and Southern Cal, because he was later, I believe.
He actually was the head coach of the Jets at one point.
That's right. But he didn't go right there from a D-backs coach at Minnesota.
Yeah, go right there from a Minnesota D-backs coach. So I'd have to go look up his progression, and to tell you the truth, I really have never cared enough to look up Pete Carroll's progression as a coach.
I met the dude. I met the dude down at South Bend. It was interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure he's charming as hell. He's a salesman. What would you expect? Every coach is a salesman.
But the thing that Bill brought up yesterday, and we've mentioned it before, is one of these guys have these problems, they're still considered like a great coach. Mortal words of my buddy Beldo, it was over at the club one night. Beldo's name is Dick Belden. His brother was a quarterback at Notre Dame and in the Cowboys, and he has a national championship ring and a Super Bowl ring. And he was a trader on the trading floor, real nice guy. That's the younger brother. And Beldo is one of the nicest guys, but he's a little out there. So I said something about, do you believe that these guys hired this sleazeball? This is years ago, and he goes, Tommy, they don't want a saint. They want a coach. And a coach's job is to get around all the rules, get the right guys on the floor, and win. Okay, then.
Yeah, well, there you have it.
There you have it.
In many cases, it isn't even that first part.
His other famous line was, I read this thing, Jen and I were doing a show, and it's something about out of the 50 states, is it 45, Kevin, that the highest paid person in the state is either a football or a basketball coach, or 42 or something? So I say this to Beldo. He looks at me right now and he goes, Tommy, really, who the hell would like to live in one of those other states? There's always a different point of view, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
I said, Beldo, you don't care if like the chief of surgery at the North Dakota hospital or something makes more dough? Yeah, he's not worth theirs, but what does he bring in?
Until I check into the hospital.
Anyway,
I care a great deal at that point.
So you put together a list of guys here. We'll go through it quick, but it's pretty interesting.
It came up with Will Wade,
yeah.
Who is leaving McNeese State. So now I'm forgetting. Where's he going? Is he going to Texas?
He's going to Texas.
Yeah.
They just hired him.
He's going to Texas. Well, he was actually had a very good record at LSU, but they wound up having to fire him because of a large number of NCAA violations. So when I say they have to serve penance, that means you have to, if you want to be a head coach again, well, nobody's going to touch you, or very few people are going to touch you right off the bat. So you have to go serve penance coaching at lower levels. And I think he had one job before McNeese State, and then McNeese State, and there he is.
Sort of like Gene Hackman in Hoosiers, right?
Yeah, there you go. So another one was Bruce Pearl. So Bruce Pearl is, he's at Auburn now. He had a few stops along the way. He was very famously an assistant at Iowa in the Deion Thomas situation. He's the guy that recorded a conversation and got Illinois investigated and so on. He wound up at UW Milwaukee and then eventually at Tennessee, where he got sanctions, and then while they were on probation, he had additional sanctions, and then he was documented to have lied to the NCAA investigators, which is almost a guaranteed way to be fired. And so not only did he get dismissed from Tennessee, he had a three-year show cause clause.
What does that mean? What is a show
cause? What that means is nobody else can hire him unless they can show cause why he was the only person available for the job.
How do you do that when there's 300 million people in the country?
You don't. So basically, it's like you're 3 years, you're not going to be a coach. Of course, the moment the three-year show cause expired, Auburn hired him. So, so he served his penance as, not as a coach. Whereas Kelvin Sampson, who is at University of Houston, had NCAA violations as the head coach at Oklahoma. They weren't discovered before he took the job at Indiana, and so he repeated the same violations at Indiana. Indiana forced him to resign, and he also managed to, as the investigation ended, had a five-year show cause penalty. He served his penance as an NBA assistant, and then when the five-year show cause expired, Houston hired him. Rick Pitino at St. John's now. We all know him from his days at Kentucky and then some in the NBA.
Where's
then,
his kid coaching, Kevin? His kid's in a tournament somewhere too, right?
Yeah, he was at his son Richard was at Minnesota. Now he's at maybe New Mexico.
Yeah, he was in a tournament. I saw him, the old man watching him.
So Pitino had some personal issues with an assistant's wife. But the big thing was if you remember that FBI bribery investigation, yeah. When he was at Louisville, he got caught up. They also uncovered, hiring strippers for parties for recruiting weekends and things like that. He was out at Louisville. He served his penance at Iona. So he became the head coach at Iona College in New York. And then after a few years and being successful there, St. John's hired him.
No, but he didn't get a suspension though, so he was able to go to Iona.
Right, he was just able to go to Iona, but you still have to, when you are forced out in disgrace, you generally have to serve your penance.
Then he gets hired by a Catholic school.
Yeah. Oh, how about it?
Yeah.
All the way through. Yeah. Sean Miller. Who just took the job at... No, he took... Miller took Texas. I don't know. I got to check that. But Sean Miller was another one in that FBI bribery investigation when he was at Arizona, because he was very successful at Arizona. So his former employer, Xavier, who, where he was before Arizona, threw him a lifeline and hired him as a coach. And of course, he repaid the gesture by getting out of there as soon as possible and taking a bigger job.
He's at Texas.
He's the guy that's at Texas. And I will note that deal was announced, one day, 2 days after Xavier's loss? So either it was a miracle. Texas contacted him for the first time. They negotiated the deal and executed the deal and had the press conference within 2 days. Or he's been negotiating all along, which makes you wonder what his commitment to his team at Xavier was as they worked their way through the tournament. And then, of course, you have Chris Beard, He was fired early in his second season at Texas. There was serious domestic violence allegations. Ultimately, the woman, his fiance, and I have no idea if they ever got married, decided she did not want to press the charges, so everything got dropped. But by then, Texas had fired him because they fired him right away when all of this was well documented and extremely credible. So because he was no longer a likely felon, Ole Miss was happy to hire him right away. No penance for Chris Beard.
I can't imagine abusing somebody. But if I ever did, I don't know. How would I? I don't think I'd bite him on the arm. What the hell?
Yeah, I don't think the bite marks are a good idea, and choking her and causing bruises. And
when the last time you even had an urge to bite marks, somebody?
Yeah, those are pretty damning evidence.
But we're not a dog. that's why we have a fist. We don't. Oh well, whatever. You shouldn't want to use that either. But I can't imagine bite marks on her arm and cuts on her face and leg. Was he using a knife?
I don't know. Or just because of if he's going to toss her, then where does she land? That's a good way to get cut marks too.
Oh, God, Ole Miss hired him for the next season. I like that.
Yeah. So Ole Miss hired him for the next season, and Will Wade went to North Carolina State.
That's right. Shifting gears, that's pretty interesting.
I don't get the hiring decisions. I don't know how an athletic director can go look at his board or what kind of board would put up with that and say, do we not want to bring good people into our organization in key leadership roles?
The answer is they want somebody who's going to win.
A problem for me in any other walk of life, but it really drives me nuts that as the people announce the games, it's like nothing ever happened with them. That they're all great guys, great coaches, all everything about them. And you don't have to bring up the checkered history during the game, but you sure as hell don't have to make him sound like what a wonderful guy he is.
Well, they absolutely do. They're not announcers anymore, Kevin. Really, they're pundits for the network and for the sport. I mean, there's kind of a difference, right? I mean, Howard Cosell does not get a job today.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, nobody wants to hear any of that stuff. But when some of our guys, banter back and forth, and of course I like to ruffle them a little bit. Who doesn't? But somehow we assume that some of these people are. I use the term they're just immoral, and I'm going to say they aren't immoral, Kevin. They're amoral. They don't have any idea what you're talking about.
I was just about to say the same thing. Yeah,
they have no idea what you're talking about. So hey, market's been all over the place. It's come back now. It's back in a kind of a holding pattern. The Biden dippers have come back on some, because at one point we were down $5 trillion in the market, and we probably come back 30% of that maybe. Even have like a Tesla is up $60, but it's low and things like that. What you still see the stuff like yesterday we were talking a little bit about with how the inflation numbers and how some people, when you have the Fed guy, in my opinion, doing the two-step, they constantly will not talk to you about the difference between inflation going forward and the price level that people are being essentially hosed by. They've been dodging it forever. It seems like the questions are getting a little more pointed, Kevin, to where are we ever going to go back to anywhere near where we can afford stuff? And the answer appears to be no, but it's still not exactly no. It's, what about going forward? We're doing this and that, and the economy's good, labor's strong, unemployment's low. We keep dodging these questions. And yet the market appears, even though it is somewhat lower, appears to be able to be a standout here. And the Fed has basically said, we're going to put a little more money in, and the same thing has happened in Europe. So in order, you don't screw your currencies way out of whack, it has to be essentially coordinated. And if you listen close, you're seeing China saying they're putting money in, Europe saying they're putting money in, and us saying we're putting money in. So it's being coordinated again. Do you think, and this is not, you know, this particular group in office, because as you know, if you go back 25 years, you can't even tell who left. You look at money supply, you look at those kinds of things, you can't even tell who's in office and out, despite how much people argue back and forth about some of the policies. Some of the big stuff is pretty much constant all the way through. Do you think these guys think we're going to go right back on this path of, you know, 5-7% money supply growth every year, with real growth being one, and this constant churning up where for the next 20 years a few people make all the dough again? They actually think we can go back to that? First of all, do you think they can get away with it? I don't, but maybe they can.
Well, no. It will be interesting because, you know, I think for better or for worse, I think Trump is trying to do some fundamental reshaping of the economy, with the intention to get more activity at home, more production at home. Whether that'll work, whether that'll be a long-term trend. I mean, we have some nice announcements, but they're just announcements about investments being made in the United States and big-time investments. There's a whole lot of infrastructure building going on, technology infrastructure going on. I'm knee-deep in it in this area, you know, because right here, Michiana, we have an Amazon Web Services data center opening. You know, they're hiring now. We have Microsoft building in Granger, and then there's another one that is yet to be announced who it is, that has gone and gotten data center zoning in Bristol, which is the first town east of Elkhart. So you're seeing that kind of investment, and that's a lot of a lot of work. It's also a lot of, you know, when you think of a data center and you think of all the technical stuff, but it's HVAC, it's electrical, it's, you know, all of those trade types of jobs. And so if you have that, and then if you have a lot more manufacturing coming in, and people really setting down roots in manufacturing, then I think you're starting to say, okay, you know, are we really looking at, you know, are we really looking at some real growth? Because I don't see us going back on anything. I don't see prices ever coming down. So the only way you're ever going to get anywhere, and boy, is that going to take a long time, is to begin to have, more real wage growth here. And real wage growth is going to mean that we can't be doing just service jobs. We're not going to get there by selling more hamburgers. And besides, people can't afford those either. It's going to have a complete reshaping of the base of our economy. I think that's, you know, it sounds like when I listen to the, you know, the long form interviews, it sounds like that's the mission. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I don't know if it's, you know, if they're going about it the right way, but they are doing a lot of very different things.
I don't disagree. I question if the current group, and, you know, maybe I'd start there too, Kevin, because it's first you have a politician, you get your face on TV, right? What you just mentioned is all good. But I really, maybe this is a hair political, I'd like to have somebody do something other than the people who showed up Mar-a-Lago with a suitcase full of cash. And I'm saying, is our future going to be these seven companies? We were waiting for Amazon to put up a new plant. I don't think, but the other side of the coin, we had Nancy talking last week about how she's getting mortgages for people because they have credit card debts because they ran up some business charges on their credit cards, and now the business is doing so hot and they can't pay it back. And I looked at, I'll dig it up here. I looked at, well, it actually goes back only to 2023, but our credit card interest is like 10% higher than it was 10 years ago, or like 8%. I mean, we're making it absolutely impossible for what these guys say they want to have happen to happen, because the only people appears to be able to get the dough our Hyundai coming over here. First of all, they come over here and put up a $20 billion plant. My hat's off to them. But I don't want them to get... On one hand, I want them here. On the other hand, I don't want them to have a deal that nobody else can get that's here. The idea, if we were going to be successful at this, we or the Trump administration or anybody, we would like every morning a bunch of schmucks to look in the mirror and either, while they're putting their makeup on or shaving, to say, man, you know what? Today's the day. I'm going to go find out what my financing is, and that building next door I've been looking at for 5 years, God damn it, I'm going to go buy the place, and I'm going to hire 10 people, and I'm going to take a shot at the future. And I just don't see that coming. I mean, in your area, maybe, because those guys are, maybe they're supporting the Amazon plant that's going in, but I don't see that anywhere here. I mean,
you will see some of that, and I heard Russell, it sounds like you got a comment too. You will see a certain amount of that because where Amazon's building near New Carlisle, they also have an EV battery plant that is actually, you know, it's ramping up much slower than planned because EVs are ramping up much slower than the original plan. Duh. And so we have that issue. But I think, you know, you look at a town like New Carlisle, which is on the western edge of St. Joseph County, and watch what happens between South Bend and New Carlisle, I think you're going to see a whole lot of economic growth. Just like when Amazon opened a large distribution center in Elkhart, you know, now there are probably, you know, 10 big distribution warehouses there that didn't exist before, distribution or manufacturing, and all within a mile of that. Part of that is because the infrastructure that has to go in to support a big operation like that is substantial and everybody else can piggyback on it. And part of that is because you needed a new truck stop and you needed, you know, it, because if you got all kinds of distributors there, then you needed that truck stop. You start to need some restaurants up north on that, in that part of town. A lot of other stuff comes along with it, and it will be, you know, I'm kind of interested in seeing how it unfolds. I don't know what's going to, you know, ultimately, I don't know what's going to happen. But I do see some different kinds of emphases that we did not see before.
I have this entrepreneurial bent that, of course, Hal accused me of not having, but I do. I just don't see my future, and maybe it's because of my industry, Kevin, I don't see my future as everybody working for Amazon. And I'll tell you what, in my industry...
I understand there's a huge difference between working in a distribution center and working in a data center. Those are entirely different things. And we still have, you know, we still have three substantial data centers in this area that are not, that are independent, that they're not part of Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, ecosystem. They're just independent, and you know they offer their own kinds of services, and they're, you know, they have an importance in our local economy here too.
Well, I look at my industry, Kevin, and you know it might be play the Mainberry song or something, but I had adult beverage last week with my guys, and these two young dudes showed up, and one works in regulation, I don't know, one of the exchanges, and some other guy works in the back office regulation for one of the few firms that are remaining. And they're asking me about, you know, when I started the business. And they go, you know, this business, like for us, really sucks because I'm 27 years old. There's never going to be like another firm that I can be a part of. I mean, I'm going to be working for, you know, pick a Citadel, or it wasn't them, but it was one of the Wolverine. I'll be working there. There's five firms left. I'll be working there for the rest of my friggin' life. And I'm never going to get a promotion. I'm never going to be able to own a house. I'm never going to be a trader. I'm never going to learn how to trade. And the other guy worked for, I don't know, it was OCC or the SIBO or someplace. He's the same way. I can't get a promotion. I've been here five years. I'm 28 years old. What the hell kind of job is this? I mean, these kids have zero vision about being a trader, working for a trading firm, having clients, even getting to talk to clients like I do. I mean, the vision for, I don't see anything. As long as you have four or five people running every business, this very German fascist model that we have, and I'm not accusing Trump of that, it was long before him. I mean, this is just not healthy, I don't think, Kevin. I mean, there are areas, like you say, where you happen to be in one of the one area that, I mean, to be perfectly blunt, you're stealing...
Northwest Indiana is too, but the whole state is. We have a whole statewide data center initiative and have built new credentials around it. So and it's not just us. There are lots of parts of the country that have that particular area of growth.
Well, they also have other periods that are going straight downhill because the manufacturing piece that everybody keeps saying is coming back really isn't. I mean, maybe it is a little bit, but certainly not to the extent that, I mean, you're never going to have a South Works here again. No, if Pritzker can pull off the place on South Works, I don't know how he can. Boy, if he does that, Kevin, how you find, you know, a spot that has been vacant for so many years because who don't even want to stand on the ground. If he can pull that off, I don't know. The guy goes from being one of my unfavorite governors to being Harry Houdini, but do you think he's got any chance of that?
You know, a lot of that has to do with access, too. So, you know, you can set up all kinds of stuff, but are people, you know, if you want to do manufacturing, for instance, are people going to be able to get in and out of your place with parts without it being a major issue?
Well, there's huge rail down there, so.
That is one of the big, you know, big deals about Indiana. It is such a perfectly located area for distribution that you know, it really, really works well because the access via roadways and the ability to avoid Chicago in doing it, because Chicago's a transportation slowdown. It's a big deal, and that kind of access is a big deal. I just want to throw out one more thought, and then I want to toss to Russell because he wanted to jump in a minute ago, and that is that I go back to the beginning, and I started down the list, and I don't think I ever finished it. Is what is really, and this is for your friend talking about, I'm never going to be able to get another job. What succeeds? What succeeds no matter what? Well, can you implement? Can you do some research? Are you a good problem solver? Are you a good critical thinker? Can you work in teams? Can you handle diverse teams in all aspects of diversity? It's not just racial or anything like that, but can you work with four different generations in the workplace and you know, travel from one to the next? Do you write well? Can you get in front of a group and present? Those kind of skills translate tremendously. One of the things that we're doing is one of our initiatives, and this relates to Amazon because they're hiring now, but it is not just for Amazon. Amazon has, for its AWS organization, has a set of leadership principles. It's easily documented on their website. You can find out what they are. But they interview based on those, and they are things like, you know, the first principle is customer obsession, you know, about risk taking, about all kinds of, you know, principles like that. And so this was open to the public as well as to all of our students. We started last week on Friday evening, and it's a 4-session thing that goes through all of these leadership principles and coaches people in how to answer any question about that with a personal story, and gives them practice. And because people don't have interviewing skills, but those are the kinds of principles. You know, this might help you get hired at Amazon. It'll help you get hired anywhere.
Some of these people, Kevin.
It's that kind of a development activity that'll help people get hired anywhere. And of course, you have to follow through on it in real life once you get hired. But you know, this is the kind of stuff that translates, and I would think that alone, and circling back to what advice I would give Andrew, is master that kind of stuff too.
Well, the message that kind of got through, Kevin, it's almost, you know, it's not the same as sitting at your, people used to sit at the sewing machine and just sew all day. The complaint is they never get to do anything else. They get hauled into this job, and that's what they're just going to do. They never get a chance to go to a meeting and let people know that they know something. It's almost like the industrial dark ages. Only you're dressed better, and it's an air conditioning building.
Well, I'm telling you now that, and my message to them would be: if you have the right skills and you're willing to put in the time to build a professional network and get to know people, that you very well can go land yourself a job in another.
I would agree, but I guess what we're arguing about here, that opportunity used to be internal, at least to a certain extent, and it seems like it's not at all now.
places where it's still internal.
Yeah, but jumping one to the other. But you know, some of these companies have like 3 and 6 month non-competes. For what?
Those are pretty hard to enforce. It can't be arbitrary. It has to be successful. And so I wouldn't get too hung up on that, because the courts generally do not allow you to prevent people from working.
Well, that was my answer to a couple of the guys, and they go, no, there's only like 5 or 6 firms, and they all do it, and they all honor the other guy's stuff. That's what I'm saying, Kevin.
My advice would always be, don't lock yourself into an industry.
Yeah.
I'm on my 4th different career right now, Tom.
Maybe it'll be a 5th. Who knows? Maybe you'll be an NIL studier kind of guy.
I have one more.
I'm on my 3rd. That's one of the things I tell the younger people is you. It's one of my main points. If I had been involved in that discussion, is everybody I know that's around our age has had at least 3 phases to their career. You know, I worked on the buy side. I worked in professional education. I'm now, you know.
All right, tell everybody what the buy side is.
Yeah. Oh, buy side is what Tom does.
We put in the orders, and the other guys are the sell side. They allegedly provide the liquidity.
Yeah, and I don't even count being on the floor as one of those phases, because that was only a couple of years.
Where were you? What were you in a pit?
Eurodollar.
Okay. Well, you're one of the big shots. Boy, that was a huge pit. How many people were in that pit? Like 500.
I heard a number of over 1,000, but I have a giant poster of that old pit, and I've just got to do one of those things like they do when they count the people at the inauguration and get a guesstimate in my mind of what it really was.
Was it bigger than the OEX?
Oh yeah.
It was,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, it was because they had the options and the futures all in the same spot. And then think about it, with Eurodollars they've got, you know, 10 years of, they got 40 expirations that are actually trading.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that'll do it.
It's a completely different animal.
What is that now? It's not called Eurodollars, it's called
SOFR.
SOFR.
SOFR. A secured overnight financing rate. And the big difference is Eurodollar was based on LIBOR, which was pretty much based on a survey. And SOFR is actually based on people putting money to work and trading. So I think it's a more secure number, but it's basically the same
number.
Is there
still a pit?
Well, I believe with the options that they probably still need to have a pit for that. I just haven't been over there since before. I haven't been to any of the CME floors since before COVID. So I don't, I just.
Well, there's only one left.
Yeah. No, I go to a placebo floor when they let me every once in a while, but everybody goes to, you know, with people in their 20s, and God knows I talk to more of them than you do.
Yes, you do.
It really is a matter of, you know, that they're getting their foot in the door in the financial industry. Now what they got to do is go do one of the professional certifications or go get a master's degree or something. But that, you know. And you know, they're at one of 5 trading firms. There are lots of other things that you can do within the investment industry.
It's not
hopeless.
Let me lay it out, and then I got to go. So I'll just turn it over to you guys completely. But when I start looking at careers, you know, my first and longest one was in the banking industry. But I started out as an assembly language programmer, and. You know, Andrew will appreciate that as a network guy. He'll get that. But you know, I was a real technical programmer. I was a bit flipper basically. I sort of toggled back and forth between operations and IT. Eventually, VP of operations. Senior VP of IT, senior VP of both operations and IT, you know, as the career progressed, and that was great. Then I became a small business owner, and, you know, of all things, one of the businesses that I ran was a mobile pet grooming business. And I had a lot of fun doing it, but we hit the recession of 2008 and I had to sell that. And I went to work in online retailing. Went to work for an online retailer back in IT. Managed the network group, the support group, managed the database administration, and a number of things. From there, I started teaching part-time at Ivy Tech. When the department chair for business in Elkhart decided to retire, I thought that would be a really, really cool capstone job that I could do for 3 or 4 years before I'm ready to retire. And here I applied, I got the job. The job kind of morphed into the supply chain chair, and now I'm also the chair for IT and supply chain. I've been doing this for more than 8 years, and I'm not ready to quit for any time in the immediate future because I really, really love it. So that's four distinctly different careers, and I only have one more left after this. When I need something part-time after I retire, welcome to Walmart could be on the agenda. But, you know, so what I'm going back to is, you know, Andrew, you're a tech guy now. That doesn't mean you're a tech guy forever. You chase what interests you, and different things are going to catch your attention along the way. So the best preparation you can get is getting back to what those soft skills are.
Russell, when Kevin mentions about getting out of the dog and grooming business, I couldn't help but thinking of I thought you said your dog did not bite. Sir, that is not my dog.
Inspector Clouseau, yeah.
That is not my dog. The dog's got him by the foot.
I had a blast doing that business. I was also doing some contract consulting at the time. So that was, you know, keeping my hands in IT because I helped some banks do their IT servicer, their application servicer contracts, and helped them negotiate some really good contracts. So, you know, that was part of it. And that was when I started my little side hustle on
Well, you know what, Kevin, writing. I think what part of the issue is, and I don't, you know, it's hard for me to, you know, put our ute into today's ute. But, you know, it was funny. If you came down, matter of fact, you know, when I was on the trading floor, everybody knew me, right, because I was on the board and so forth. But and I had a lot of people trading for me. And if you came down here and within 1 month, you didn't find your moldy behind on a softball team. Everybody went to the bars at night. If you didn't meet 150 people your first month, there was something wrong with you. I mean, if there was a job open anywhere, you knew about it. If you just had your ear plugged in, there were 1,000 people or 1,250 people in one room. If you couldn't figure out that somebody was hiring, I don't know. You had to have headphones on or something, but all that communication is what I see as being gone. I know it's not all gone, but it's not the same. And then COVID just made it even worse. Nobody has that kind of network. Let's put it this way: it's not easy to get that kind of network.
Well, I just sat with a student for an hour on Thursday, and you know, because he wanted to talk about it. He wanted to talk about, you know, who to do. And you know, I get them started on the network. I say, if you know, here's five people to call and just ask for some of their time to get input on a job search, input on your career. You know, they're not necessarily hiring, and they're going to tell you, well, you know, I'm not hiring, and you will say, that's okay. I'm not asking you for a job. I just want your input for 15 or 20 minutes. I think building out that professional network is great. I tell them, call these five people, use my name, they'll take your call. And then after that, then it's up to you to say, do you have anybody you recommend that I call? And you stay in touch with people, and you have to very on purpose build your professional network. You can do that with your contacts at work, but you can also do that, get your butt out to a Chamber of Commerce business after hours and meet people. Just do anything that you can. Because you never know where the opportunities will be, it's just really, really important to do that kind of stuff. To, you know, having a career, if you want to have a career, you got to work at having a career.
Well, I guess if you were a clerk for Russell or me, and all of a sudden somebody liked you and said, you know, I'll put you on a badge, or I'll train to put you on a badge or something, you could leave the next day. because everybody wanted everybody to move up. And all of a sudden, some guy who might have been a runner, a runner for Pershing, all of a sudden heard about Andrew leaving and immediately runs over. Hey, I hear you're looking for a clerk. And if the person has been there every day and always show up and are always polite, and you think they got a brain cell working, they're your new clerk the next day. I mean, it was that quick. You know, because it was, like I said, nobody has. If you haven't seen it, you have. It's like Pullman. It's 1,000 people working in one place. What isn't available? You need an electrician. You got one. You know, whatever. I mean, it's that. I don't know. We're ever going to see that again? Unless maybe you're in the Pentagon or someplace.
Well, you know, I teach courses for one local corporation that has probably 90 plants around the country. I get students from all the plants. One of the things I do is I have multiple students work on a project for one of the plants, so they all are working for almost everybody is, you know, from a different plant, builds a different product, has a different process, has a different history, because some of them were acquired and some of them were not acquired companies, and they all work together on a project. They get some tangible results for their employer, who gives them, you know, who pays to send them to me, but at the same time, they are building out their network. They are, you know, meeting people, learning other functions, learning what goes on around the company. These are really important things, and that's what I would turn around and tell a network engineer or a programmer or anybody: is learn your way around the company. That's another way to find opportunities.
Well, that's true, Russell. What's going on?
I gotta go. You guys have a good rest of the hour.
Your team dumped their coach. They got a new guy. We just did hear earlier. We went through the coaches with the sin past, and now they hire all the new guys. And as soon as they're out of purgatory, everybody hires a new guy. So it's kind of crazy, huh? Are you guys talking all about? I know you're more in the business side, which probably, you know, I guess it's boring on that side. But on the behavioral economics side, I find this thing going on with college sports is absolutely fascinating. I can only even equate it to 1973, when everything got deregulated. It was just a whole new world. I mean, do you guys talk about it all or not?
I mean, we talk about it, but it's just it's so sickening and taking away from, you know, one of my favorite, what used to be one of my favorite sports, which is college basketball. You know, the season comes to an end and your team disperses, and then next year you get a new team, for the most part. You know, the NIL stuff, it's going to ruin the NCAA tournament. There are no team, and I haven't looked at the bracket, but I saw an article that said that all the teams that are in the Sweet 16 are from the Power Four conferences.
Yeah.
So much for Cinderella's, so much for, you know, the fun part of the NCAA tournament. You know, I'm actually sitting here thinking that maybe they need to have two tournaments. They need to have the NCAA tournament for those four conferences, and the NIT can be for all the rest of them.
Well, I'm going to have a research. If there's any questions you want me to ask, one of my friends I'm having an adult beverage with tonight went to Marquette. Of course, he's not happy with those guys' early exit. You notice the difference between the Big East 10 years ago and this year? They've got nobody left. They have been really slow. I mean, the guy at I keep forgetting the guy's name at Marquette. He's got that wacky name, Shaka something something. Their coach, good coach. But he was very, I mean, 2 years ago, my friend said he wasn't going to bid for anybody in the portal. Now, everybody knew for the last 2 years they've had a pretty good team. They needed a big guy. And all of a sudden, I think he's getting letters saying, hey, we better pony up an NIL thing, because, you know, if we were able to go out and essentially buy a big guy this year, we might have done better. But there's a reason why the SEC all of a sudden had 14 teams in there in 10 years ago. The old record wasn't 10 years. 2011 was the Big East. They had 11 teams, right? There's a reason why the SEC now is all of a sudden way better than anybody in terms of a conference. Right? I mean, the average team in the SEC is so much better than Notre Dame. It's scary, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where we're going with this. I mean, does everybody really want? I could see schools having clauses where if you leave, I want my tuition back. I don't see how. I mean, I don't know that the
Trump. Well, the players have all the power right now.
I would I'll tell you what, if I'm the IRS, right now, how is tuition not taxable?
Yeah, no, they're the business end of things is probably going to have to change a bit as well. And I'd love to be a fly on the wall as some of these guys are told that they need to go write a check to the IRS. Because I doubt many of them are many of and I put myself in this classification because I was struggling. Then I finally had a good year in my 20s, and then I had to go on a payment plan with the IRS.
I've been there.
I know those things happen.
Yeah, they're actually very nice.
Yeah. Oh, that, you know what? I wish I knew the woman's name that worked with me on that, because she was just such a doll about it. I there's just no other way to put it. And I may be the only person in the world that my only interaction ever with the IRS was a pleasant one.
Well, this is years and years ago for me, but if you didn't have the dough, you didn't send it in, and they send you a thing. You want to be on the easy payment plan? The answer is yes. And how much can you pay? And then if you ever had to miss a payment, you'd say, it was a bad month. Okay, pay us next month. It was way better than a bank.
They charge you a little bit of interest, and there you go.
But it's not like a credit card.
No. The interest isn't that bad. But
Russell, if you care to comment a little bit about, as I see a lot of the stuff the administration's doing, and I don't have any problem with trying to get more business here, but like anything else, it's the process, right?
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to do that, you have to have a. On a personal level, I'm concerned about the proliferation of. I won't say well. I will say that either the big lie or the big something something. I mean, I spent, you've been asked this last week, I spent a few hours the other day going through all this tariff stuff. God, Russell, it's so damn complicated, I can't even go there. Some of them I didn't even know we had combo quota tariff stuff.
What? Okay, and before you go anywhere on that, you remember when Reagan basically gave us a little talk about inflation or whatever and kind of lectured us?
Yeah, he didn't know what he was talking about.
Do you think it would help if somebody let us know what the tariff situation was on January 19th of 2025?
You're way better off having people snipe about it. I mean, this last weekend, I wasn't being heavy-handed, but we met with a few people, and there, a couple of them were Trumpers, a couple were one, and I said, by the way, when they were talking about how Canada's been, brutalizing us for years, and I said, okay, you've heard that, and oh, by the way, it's accentuated on Newsmax and Fox all day long. Nobody ever gives you a specific. Nobody ever says, here's an example of how we're getting screwed by Canada.
Yeah, that's what I would like. I think that would be very helpful.
And I say, okay, by the way, name me one product. Well, what do you mean? They've been screwing us. No. It's not what I asked. I said, name me one or two that you have researched and they're screwing us with.
Milk.
It's actually the word that's come out has been dairy. But you know what the weird part is? From what I read, is it's more of a quota, and if we go over a certain number, then there's...
Yeah.
But I don't think we've ever gone over it.
I don't know if we've gone over it or not. I know it's like a really small niche thing up in the far, far, far northeast as well, where basically the dairy farms are, you could throw a rock. Yeah. You can throw a rock from one dairy farm in the U.S. to another one in Canada.
But everybody, I'm sure... I think from what I gather, your wife is one of the healthy people, or tries to be healthy people. And I'm thinking if she was on the air with us, she'd say she didn't want anybody. You want to minimize your what? High fructose corn syrup. Right? Because nobody wants that instead of sugar. Right? Matter of fact, when I buy a jar of barbecue sauce, I only buy the ones with sugar, not the ones with. But you think, how many people in this country can you count them on one hand? You have any idea of we've had a sugar quota/tariff for probably 100 years? That's why there's high fructose corn syrup. I mean, if the tariffs on sugar are like 4 cents a pound up to a number, and after that it goes to like 17 cents a pound, which is totally prohibitive, right? We have some of these. Every country has a spot where they protect their very own. We protect the tariffs on timber in Canada are not from them, they're from us.
Yeah.
To protect our people. I'm sure somewhere along the line, Canada's doing this to us on something. Who knows? Maybe it's booze. I have no idea. But I don't. This whole idea that we can argue about this and fight back and forth, almost come to blows, and nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. I don't, and I spent 3 hours at it, and I learned maybe 4% of what I need to know. Just saying.
I mean, yeah. I would love because I never focused on tariffs. It's not an area that you know. It's funny. I started to say it's not an area that impacted me. It is an area that's been impacting me my whole life, but I really was not aware of how it was going about impacting me. My impression was that the idea was to make sure that we maintained some critical industries within the United States. That's what I want tariffs for. I feel like we learned a lesson in around COVID that we need to. Globalization is just freaking wonderful until it's not, and it's not when everybody's more concerned about themselves. And I do think that we need to do some things where, if it comes down to it, we can be 100% self-sufficient.
I don't know that we'll ever sort of get to that. I think we were
at that maybe 100 years ago. And we have that ability. We totally have that ability.
But do you want to be? I mean, this is where...
No, you don't want to be, but you want to be able to be when you need to be. Do you see what I mean? You don't want to be dependent upon... I probably overly focus on China, but you really don't want to be dependent on a country that has a completely different value set than your country does.
Oh, I agree.
Unfortunately, when you talk about China, they're all ethnically the same thing. So but it's not a race thing. It's the country and the Communist Party thing.
Yeah, but
They appear to want to, impose their will on the rest of the world. And how many people can kind of stop that? If anything, we've been helping them with that.
Well, the economic, and again, if I ever dig around and find it, I'd love to share this stuff if I still have it. A lot of my thought process, for good or bad, was from this two-quarter course I took in history, economic thought, and the basics of economics. And the basics are really sort of simple, Russell. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you and I have a farm next to each other, and guess what? We don't really like each other, and our dogs don't like each other. But we both recognize that, God, this Russell guy's got away with cows. He does a boatload better with getting milk than I do, and I seem to be a little bit better on the corn than he is. There's a natural trade there, even if we don't like each other, even if we have one finger up in the air in the middle as we hand... I hand you the corn and you hand me the milk, right? I mean, there's trade now to the point where, what if Russell hires a bunch of child laborers and that's why his milk is cheaper than mine? Okay, well that's a problem. Or if it gets to the point where, if he ever cut me off, I don't even have a cow left. Now that's a problem. I mean,
yeah, you don't want to be overly dependent. I mean, it sounds minor, but it's the one that I know is true. We couldn't get surgical masks.
Yeah.
Or we couldn't get the good ones. And then when we did get the good ones from them, we found out that they were kind of defective. They were probably sending us their rejects.
But this is what we've morphed into. I mean, the theory was, the Milton Friedmanites of the world, and they've been proven... I guess, Russell, you could say they've been proven wrong, but then you have to say, okay, why are they wrong? I mean, the idea was, is everybody's like us? Well, once you start thinking that way, then you got a problem worldwide, right? But there's like, okay, people make less money in Mexico than they do here. So Chevy's going to put a plant down in Mexico, and it's going to be like that for a while. But as time goes by, the workers are going to demand, if they're doing, oh, God, I'm going to go into wage theory here, if they're producing $30 worth of value per hour someday, somewhere, they're going to get paid more than $3 an hour. Whether it's going to be a union, whether it's going to be God knows what, whether it's just the economy themselves or other people hiring away to do the same stuff. Your belief is in economics in the sense that someplace, somewhere, those guys are making first 8, then 10, then 12, maybe not as much as here, but enough to be, quote, customers, to where at the end of the day, maybe the people here make 25 because the plant and equipment is so much better that with 25, they're giving you $100 worth an hour. We're down there, they can only give you 60 because the plants aren't as good, at least for the time being. But their point is eventually...
And you got a ship.
Yeah, but their idea was eventually this will sort of even out. Yet, it obviously... Well, it surely didn't in China, right? I mean, nobody assumed... I mean, Milton Friedman's famous line was, economic freedom will lead to political freedom. And if there was only one thing the guy was wrong about, that's probably it. I mean, it may... Who knows? Give China another 400 years, he might be right. But so far, he's not doing so hot, right?
Nah, I don't think you'll be right on that. What's funny is they're experiencing deflation in China now. So, I mean, Friedman might like how things are working with the economy because people's salaries have gotten cut in half, and everybody's, you know, there's this constant adjustment to, you know, they may have better free markets in certain areas over there than we do.
Well, but his idea was somewhere, someplace, if you and I were selling tires at the Walmart and they're paying us $5 an hour, which they don't, and we were somehow enough, you and I were good enough to where we're selling $500 worth of tires an hour, somebody's going to notice us, somebody's going to give us a raid to keep us, that this will eventually, but that's the European-American model. The rest of the world isn't necessarily like that, it doesn't appear. Now, as for why in Mexico... The people there are still making, you know, all the rice they can eat. Better than that, maybe on the Chevy line. Is it the gangs that are keeping their?
I mean
something's wrong. But I do know that in China, if you want to build a factory there, you go to the Chinese embassy here. They'll hook you up with a guy. The guy will find out where the people are, who your supply people are. They'll find you the plant. And oh, by the way, he's your quote consultant, and he's the guy. He's politically connected, and he keeps his thumb on the workers. And by the way, he gets paid very handsomely. But that's been their drill forever. It's not a secret, right? I mean, you know
about why. And do you think that guy still has a job?
I'm sure they do. People are still over there. I mean, people are
exiting there.
Well, sort of.
But they're not. But they're not making a big thing out of it because if you're Apple, and you say, you know, if you've got internal intentions of producing, I mean, they're already producing iPhones in India instead of China. They're starting to shift their production. And it's not something that you can flip a switch around, but I bet you a couple of iPhone generations and they're just not making them in China anymore. But you don't make a big announcement that you're doing that because the way that China would reciprocate would be they would probably just seize everything that you have in their country and you're screwed.
We got to go to break, but maybe I should try and track down Matt. Well, we had a guest. You know these guys are, Russell? You might. There's an outfit, I think they're in West Chicago, and they do coatings for pots and pans. Don't call it Teflon, then you sound like an idiot because Teflon went out a zillion years ago. But wasn't Teflon originally an invention for the space program or something like that?
I think it was. When you said Teflon, I was like, is that one of the, you know, they try to justify the space program with all the cool things that came out of it science wise, like Tang.
Yeah, Tang. There you go.
Which was,
they still sell
basically
that stuff?
Basically astronaut orange juice, I guess.
Do they still sell that stuff?
I don't know if they do or not. I'll go looking for it next time I'm at the grocery store, which probably won't be for about 10 or 15 years. But
anyway, so the dude is on talking about. He goes, "Yeah, we our operations are in China," and I'm like, "How did that happen?" He goes, "Well, not because I wanted to." He goes, we provide the coatings for people who make the pots and pans. And all those guys moved to China. I guess I could have told them to come back here for me to put the coating on and ship them somewhere else, but they didn't want to do that. So we had to be right near them in China and put the coatings on over there, and they shipped them wherever they went. He goes, "I didn't want to be there, but I had no choice." I mean, so I'm wondering if he's still there. I bet he is. Maybe he still doesn't want to be there.
Some of the people that said come follow us to China are saying follow us somewhere else now.
Well, that would be nice. SP futures down one, NASDAQ futures down 28. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Quick break.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. SP futures down one, NASDAQ futures down 31. So we've been kind of convalescing here the last couple days as we had the two big up days in a row. So now we were down a bunch, and we've come back some of the ways, and now the question is where we're going to go from here, and maybe Russell will tell us. Maybe Dax, these guys have been up huge, but they're down 126 today, 0.6%. FTSE up 19.2, CAC around down 48.6. So not sure, maybe Russell has a clue as to why the FTSE keeps going the other way from these guys a lot of days now, but they are. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 246, that's 0.6%. Hang Seng up 139.6%. Shanghai, they were down a bunch yesterday, so up down on that one. Shanghai, however, is not moving at all. It was like down 50 cents yesterday. Today it's down a buck. So it's like they're not even open, which is kind of weird. U.S. 10-year up 4 basis points, 4.35. The Bund unchanged, 2.79. Japan up 1, up 1.59. Oil seemingly wanting to get back to 70 bucks here. Up 59 cents, 69.59, but still kind of mired in this 67 to 72 range. Brent up 60 cents, 73.62. Natural gas down a penny, 382. RBOB up a penny, 221. Gold is up 590, 3,031. Looking like it might want to stay over 3,000 for a while. Now, of course, me saying that means it might go the other way. Silver down, up 15 cents, 34.34. It's been up this week as well. Copper up 4 cents, 525. Boy, a couple years ago, if you could have got copper, I think you could have got it under $4. That's been a nice trade. Foreign exchange, 107.8, so the dollar's up a little bit versus the euro from last week. British pound, 128.9, so it's up a little bit against the pound, but not as much. Crypto, down 437, 87,656. And we got for us quick traffic weather sports.
All right, it is 7:38 here in Chicago on March 26. All we got for sports is the Cubs beat the Braves for spring training, 4-2. For Chicago weather, it is currently 34 degrees, and it's going to warm up throughout the day. Get a little bit of sun in there as well. We're going to have a high of 46. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 70 degrees. They're going to have a high of 93. They're going to have a mostly cloudy day. And there's an advisory here to avoid strenuous activities outside, which I feel like I've seen a lot hotter than 93, but that's what they're saying.
It came out pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. So, other than that, Chicago traffic, it looks like the earlier accident on the Kennedy has cleared. However, the traffic has not. There's now an accident on the right shoulder of the Stevenson that is heading south at Central Avenue. Backed up to Damon Avenue. Let's see. Small delays up to 5 minutes, but that may build later. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, there's all kinds of cross currents in the market. You know, April 2nd, people are looking at this This big day. But hey, I want to ask you one question. Maybe you have no idea about this one, but I don't, so I'm normally trying to. You ever doing this stuff with this 23andMe people?
Yeah.
Now they just declared bankruptcy, and everybody's worried about everybody's stuff getting out. What did they used to do? They did historical DNA testing or something for people?
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a gigantic database of DNA.
So when you would, you know, do the little thing to find out that you're, you know, like just about everybody has a little bit of Neanderthal in them. But, you know, I did it because I was adopted and didn't really have clarity on where I came from. So I, you know, and I'm like a big part Scottish, which I guess is not surprising. But there's a lot more information. There's a lot more information in there. And they've been creating a huge DNA database. And now I guess if they've declared bankruptcy, that database is up for grabs.
But they,
I personally think that our federal government should grab it.
What do you have any idea? Or do you have any idea what depth they go? In other words, the reason why I ask this is there's three of these, right? There's the Ancestry.com one, there's the National Geographic one, and then there's these guys, right?
Yeah.
Now the one that you met him, Robert, a guy from the Fed, he did the National Geographic one.
Okay.
Now that's they didn't. Well, he's German, but they didn't tell him. By the way, you're German. It's which push out of Africa your group came from, and he was showing me all these maps and stuff. And evidently, there was different pushes out of Africa to populate Europe and all the rest of these places. And the first push did not head left along the Mediterranean like you might have thought, even though the weather's nicer there. It actually went up through Eastern Europe and across almost Northern Europe to Britain and somehow across. Well, not somehow across. And the Neanderthals were still living up there.
Yeah.
So if you're that group, German and Irish, he's like, normal is what, 0.5%? He's like 1.9 or something. I'm giving him no end of grief, as you probably can imagine. Where I'm getting to here is now the Ancestry.com, they'll tell you, yes, you're Scottish, you're Italian, you're something. But my question is, are they down to the number here where if you were a female and you had the gene that you don't want, if you don't want to get breast cancer, is that in their stuff? Is the medical stuff in their stuff, or do they just gloss over it, and once they find out you're Scottish, they stop there?
I think the medical stuff's in there too.
Really? Ugh. That would not be good.
I think that's what and that's you know, they can work with, I believe they can work with that database as well to figure out maybe what they need to be focusing on in the healthcare space. So there's probably a benefit behind that, but I've always been like, if people want to know my personal information beyond, you know, not personal information where they can drain my bank account or anything, but if they want to know, you know, if they want to put a tracker on me and know what everything that I did yesterday, more power to them, because I'm boring. You know,
you see, I have the total opposite view of that.
That's the kind of stuff that I really wouldn't want. You know, it's none of anybody's damn business.
See, you know, if you were a Southsider,
that's why I never did a 23andMe, and it's because I knew that what I thought was going on with some of that information was that you know, that they were using it relative to DNA databases where they hadn't solved crimes and backing into some of those things. And you know, I want whatever I've done in the past, I want to stay in the past, so I don't want my DNA floating around out there.
No, I just
that's a joke.
I have such a different view of this. I really wouldn't care, because I'm pretty much boring like you, except for the fact that if somebody wants to know, I want to frustrate him or her. Why would they want to know?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, you know, like what they used to say on the trading floor, what are you writing a book? Leave this chapter out?
Yeah.
So we've got some cross currents in the market. We seem to have, even though your Fed chairman and those people will tell you how great everything is, some of the numbers look like they're weak. The next month's labor look like they're not so hot, maybe. But then, you know, the amount of people laid off, I don't know if they're even counted yet, because some people are getting... I guess if you get laid off, you don't get counted until your last check comes to you, right, or something. We'll dig with that on Carl on Friday, but it seems like the people at the lower end that were looking for the Trump salvation aren't getting it. Oh, by the way, I don't think anybody could have given it to him. You know, it's not like Trump could have and isn't. I mean, the stuff that has been going on for 15 years. And oh, by the way, he was there for four of them. So,
I keep looking at, and I'm trying to keep an open mind about this kind of stuff. I really am, and I want to, you know, we both worked in situations where we probably had a new boss come in, and they want to do things a bit differently, and you're like, that's not how we've done things in the past, et cetera. Sometimes the results are positive, sometimes the results are negative. I'm trying to keep an open mind about this, and I really want to see where we're at 6, 9, 12 months after he's had some time to implement the things that he wants to do and see how they work. One of the things that bugs me a bit is you know, the courts throwing up a bunch of roadblocks. I would rather, you know, get on with trying to rebalance how we do competitively around the world, you know, et cetera, and see what the results are. Back when Reagan first came into office, we were in a pretty bad place. And I'm not saying we were in a bad place, but we weren't in a great place when Trump came back in, as far as things going on in the world, et cetera. And I feel like the first year that Reagan was president, he just got ripped on. But eventually, you know, a lot of the things that they implemented turned things around for our country for a period of time. You could even argue that you know, Clinton's ability to shrink the government a bit was on the heels of you know, the peace dividend that we got from Reagan, and then Bush being being tough with the communists. Everybody, yeah, and when Reagan first got elected, you had all these protests in Europe with, you know, Reagan was going to start World War III because he was being so tough with the Russians. If anything, it went exactly the opposite direction. So, you know, give it a little bit of time. I really want to see what the results are. And you know, you're talking about being on the floor. I grew up in the South, and I was a diehard, oh my God, I can't believe a Democrat's going to be president when Clinton got elected. I really was. And there was a guy who said, you know, these on the floor, an older guy was like, these things swing back and forth, don't worry about it, they do good, they do bad. I mean, he really kind of talked me off the ledge, because I was not a big fan when Clinton got elected, just because of my upbringing, and I was very closed-minded at the time. That's how I'm trying to be around this Trump thing. He wants to change the way some things are being done. The way some things have been done have not necessarily been to the benefit of the United States. And, you know, I really feel like, I feel like if he could communicate 10% as well as Reagan did, it might help the whole situation.
I think that, you know, I'm a whole different, I've been reading actually more about it lately, because I was never a huge fan of Reagan. He had a lot of really good points. You know, and it was a kind of a simple time, and he had a simple view of things. And by the way, even guys like Dan Rasinkowski, or Democrats, said if he had a deal with the guy, he had a deal. He wasn't slippery. He was an honest guy, and those kinds of things. Then you have James Garner said he wasn't smart enough to be the head of the Screen Actors Guild. How the hell did he ever be president? You know, so you get different views. And if you look at the numbers, the economic numbers, the real screw up, the deep, darkest depths of the numbers were in his first term, not in Carter's.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everybody looks at, you know, as Carter's being the, one of my extremely right-wing acquaintances accused this as being like a Carter-like inflation. And I said, wait a minute. Nixon was the guy with wage and price controls, right?
Yeah.
And wasn't, you know, Jerry Ford whip inflation now? That was before Carter, right? I mean, it wasn't like it just started.
Right.
I mean, it's when you look at what these people have done, at the end of the day, I'm willing to say that Reagan had a reasonably successful presidency. But it's the same kind of crap, in my opinion. He lobbed his big tax decrease out on the world, where he lowered all the rates, which, by the way, I think was a good idea, because they were too high at the time. He lowered the rates, but he got rid of a lot of the deductions. All right, so and then everybody forgets that a year and a half later, when people saw what the tax receipts were turning into, they panicked. Even the Republicans panicked and put through the biggest tax increase.
Yeah.
In U.S. history, everybody forgets that part. If you're on the right. But the interesting thing, if you're on the left, but if you're a little guy, the first group cut down a lot of the numbers for corporations and so forth, but they were too high. They were like 70% or something. So I mean, it's not like they shouldn't have been done. The second time, it increased a lot of the payroll taxes. So at the end of the day, the people at the short end of the stick ended up with a tax increase, where the other people still were either probably even or lower. So it was definitely a class thing, at the time. But inflation, just as it's doing now, Russell, I'm a little older than you. I used to do people's tax returns, for less. I mean, 10 people, not 100 or anything like that. And because they were pretty easy to do, for God's sake. I mean, you didn't need a when you got the thing from the IRS. If ever you have nothing to do for 10 minutes, Google like the tax return, the thing they sent you in like 1977. It's about 15 pages long. Every table you need is in there. They would send that out to everybody. You didn't just get a W-2. You got this form from the government, which was the, whatever the tax form. And they would tell you every deduction was in there, everything was in there, and there had to be 15 maybe brackets, maybe not 15, maybe 12, but there were a lot of them. So if you were involved in the inflation from, say, 71 through 81, if you got a every time, and even because I did this for home, people had, a lot of the unions after this went on for forever and ever, actually had cost of living clauses in their contract. Mm-hmm. Most of them weren't 100%. There were 70, 60, 50, whatever it was. So if the inflation over a quarter was 1%, or 5%, which it was a couple of years, say 4, you would get a 4 or a 3% increase in your next week's pay because the inflation was so embedded into everything. But the problem was you might have started out where if you made 16 grand to 17.5, your rate was, say, 12%. And 17.5 to 19 might have been 15%, and you had this piggy move up all the way up these brackets. And like I say, you would never guess now that the bracket between like 17 grand and 18.5 was different than 16.2 to 17, but it was. So say at the end of the 5-year period or 8-year period, your salary might have gone from 17 to 25, and probably kept up with inflation pretty much. Doesn't matter. Now you're paying maybe 18% to the government where you were paying 12. So the single biggest benefactor of inflation is the government, which nobody will ever say on national TV, right? Even now. Right now, I haven't looked this year, but if you're making 40 grand a year, what are you paying? Like, I should have looked at this before I said something. If you're making 40 grand, after all of the stuff, your deductions, I think your rates, I'll just pick a number off the top of my head. I'll say you're paying 15%.
Yeah, and personally, I don't think you should pay anything.
Well, but I'm saying at 50, at 50, you're paying like 22%. Well, yeah. if your wages have kept pace in the last 5 years, the guy making 40 is now making 50, right? He's not any power ahead in the world, really. Yet now he's paying way more in taxes. And oh, by the way, if he's paying for his own health insurance, over 50, you don't get any help from government, right? So
I guess not.
You're way worse making 52 now than you were making 42 or 40 in 2020, I think, which is the same phenomenon that happened under Reagan, even though everybody loves the guy, right, because he was a movie star. But the numbers never worked out for the regular person back then, and they're not working out for him now.
No. I think they're worse now.
I think they could be worse because you got the hospitalization part in there, which is even more bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, so I don't know how. I don't know what you thought of Powell's speech last week, but he's telling everybody you're gonna have to live with the price level. We may try.
I thought he was pretty
it's kind of interesting, I guess, that I watched the market and I watched him speak, and I love to watch the market reaction while he speaks. And you know, I guess everybody is resolved to we've got a somewhat of a difficult path in front of us, because I didn't think he sounded particularly bullish for the stock market as he spoke, and stocks did nothing but go up.
Well, sure he did. So, sure he was.
I guess we've set the bar so freaking low at this point that it doesn't take a whole lot to get the stock market to go up.
See, you know what's interesting, Russell, is you and I, I think, have a lot of the same education, yet it's a little bit different. You look at more on the, well, I hope I do too, but on the business side of things and what he's saying, I zero in, and maybe I wish I would never have gone there, I can't get the monetarism out of my brain. And I, to me, the entire message of what he said was, we don't give a rat's ass about, or maybe we do, but we're not going to address the fact that cars are 40% higher than they were 5 years ago. We're over that. And he also said, our goal is 2%, but if we got to ride with 2.7 or 3 for the next two decades, it's okay with us. It's like saying, my goal is to be a jockey in a seventh race today, but oh, by the way, what am I cooking for breakfast? You know, I mean, to me, that's all I heard. And as soon as the market heard that, I think, in my opinion, and 2 days after, the European Central Bank said they were going to loosen up so Germany could print money, or they won't print it, but they're going to buy the German bonds, essentially, to build tanks and so forth. It told me that the euro and the U.S. are back on the same thing where we're going to keep pushing money to the system, running the prices up, and people who are wage earners are just screwed. We're back on this track. That's what I heard out of his speech. Now, am I being too narrow with this or what?
No, I don't think you're being too narrow with it at all. I was surprised that everybody took it as well as he took it. You know?
Well, what can you do? He's never going to have you and me in a room asking him a real question.
No. No, and he didn't. I felt like the questions were pretty softballish.
What is it? I know this is really old stuff. When we have a rally like Monday, and we had one hell of a rally on Monday, and the 10-year rates are up 0.5%, that makes my behind want to clench, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Now, yesterday we were up a little bit. Today we're up another 0.5%. So we've gone from 4.2 to 4.36, the 10-year rate now in 3 days. Since when is that good for the market?
And the stock market doesn't seem to be overly. Yeah, that's. I feel like the stock market expectations maybe are just so freaking low at this point that's why it's, you know, that's why we've seen the strength that we've seen. We also, you know, we have sold off a bit, and we're a tad off of our highs. Not too much, but a tad. So that might make people feel a little bit better about putting money to work right now. But I feel like if you're patient, you're going to get a much better shot than where we are right now.
Well, we haven't had a situation where the market went down and stayed down for like a decade in a really long time. But it's happened.
Yeah.
It's happened 2.5 times during my lifetime. When you look at the spiders, the SPY, S&P, we tap out at, let's say, 611. We go flying down to 556, and now we're back to 575. So that's our bounce. We've come back roughly 40%. And now it's kind of decision time, isn't it? I mean, it probably went down too hard too fast. Now it's come back some. Now what do you do? You know, crap or get off the pot. I don't know what to. I've got, for what we do, Russell, once in a while, with our somewhat boring protective program, once in a while we get to be heroes, and this was one of those times. I mean, we had puts and everything. They weren't real close. We kind of let them, you know, let the stuff run a little bit, let the big dog hunt. But on the way down, you know, from 611 to 550, we probably made 65% of it back on puts. And then we rolled everything down there, and now on the way back up, we've kind of let it run. So I'm going to say we probably haven't lost anything. We might actually be up something. Because, you know, that shit, like, never happened. You know, the put should be like your car insurance. You should never have to cash in, right? Your collision. And yet, the last couple of years, we ended up rolling these puts more than we used to do it like once a year back when we first started this in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of where you make the money. The thing runs down, you roll the puts down, it comes right back up, and then you roll the puts back up. We've never had to do that much maneuvering on portfolios ever. But it works to our advantage. I mean, it's a good thing, but that it happens. But it's not. You'd rather the thing just keep creeping up and not have to worry about it, right? I mean, it's interesting market stuff here. It seemed, you know, we're still high. Some of these stocks are still, you know, traditionally pretty high. It's incredible to me that we'll drop, you know, 15% or something, and everybody says, "Oh no, we got to come flying back up." I've seen it go down and stay down. I mean,
it's not like we. When I say a better opportunity, I'm saying better opportunity for the long term. I'm not saying that you're going to buy it next week and then be, you know, and then be up 10% in a month. No, it's more of for the long term. I think we're going to get a better shot to get in here.
If you were one of the shrewd dudes that got in at, you know, 550, and now it's 575, are you looking for the long term? Or are you saying thank you very much?
What do you mean by
that? Well, I mean, when he was talking, if you were a buyer, which was last week, and now we've come back, you know.
Is it the point? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd say thank you very much at this point.
I mean, because you have to do that was a big drop from 611 down to 550.
It was, and I'll tell you what, we don't get into, you know, we don't get into this too much, but in about 3 weeks, we're going to start seeing earnings.
Yeah,
and you know this will be the clarity from companies around earnings. I can't imagine it's going to be overly positive.
Well, I'm just wondering. Well, we're toast out of time here, but we do a lot of earnings plays, as you know, and I've told everybody. I'm not going to go into how we do them, but I'm going to say, boy, January, February, we had one hell of a year going. Now all of a sudden, everyone we've done. And we don't take a lot of risk, but the straddles have been the moves of 1 and 2 and 3 times straddles. It's crazy how far this stuff is moving. Is that going to come back, or is this the future?
I think, you know, that is very much of a fourth quarter phenomena. But I wouldn't be shocked if we see some outlier moves, but probably not as many with the first quarter earnings that we're getting ready that are going to start coming out.
Okay.
The thing is, with fourth quarter earnings, companies tend to be more honest because those are the ones that are certified. And if management's lying or makes a mistake, those are the ones that they're actually legally liable for, is the annual report, not the quarterly.
So you're saying we should maybe lay off the fourth quarter and do the rest?
Oh, no. The other way around. Fourth quarter's going to be the most volatile.
All right. Well, are you here or are you in Indiana?
I'm in Indiana.
All right. Well, enjoy yourself, bud.
I will.
And we'll talk at you next week. SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures down 10. Not much going on as so far. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.